What's up? I am back here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. Very pleased to be back on the show. My co-host, of course, Canucks geek Thomas Strands, who covers the team for The Athletic. We're coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? Canucks Talk brought to you by the Hockey Shop in Langley. It's a great day for hockey. 650, that's the Dunbar Lumber text line. Big Wednesday show here, and man, do we have a lot to get into today on the show. Canucks lose 4-3 in overtime to the Blues last night. Thatcher Demko makes his return. Rick Tocchet is fed up with questions about Elias Pettersson. JT Miller could speak to the media today at practice. They're just going to get on the ice momentarily here for practice at Rogers Arena. A lot going on.
Or will he practice and not talk?
We'll see.
That would be wild.
We will see.
But par for the course for a club that clearly is fed up with completely fair and reasonable, and in fact, not even negative or critical questions about just about anything.
Okay, so we'll do the crossover, of course, with Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal coming up in a few minutes. Jason Buchla joins us at 1.
A couple weeks ago, the day before actually Miller took his leave, I described there being a sense of sneering joylessness around this team. And that felt like the sneering joyless apex last night. Not just the completely passionless performance from the team in a game where you'd hope that they'd have something extra to compete for with Thatcher Demko playing his first game in 9 months. But, you know, Rick Tocchet getting upset about just talking about Pettersson.
Yeah.
I thought was telling.
And also,
you know, talking about like, hey, you guys have had results, but maybe the process or underlying effort hasn't been there. And, you know, defended the team's rush defense, which was completely indefensible. If you were to defend the Canucks' rush defense, at least there'd be some defense involved, right? From last night. They gave up a ton of breakaways.
Mm-hmm.
Thatcher Demko bailed them out in his return to action. And I guess big
picture. Classic Demko.
Well, and I guess big picture, the fact that Demko looked like himself, it didn't look like he'd changed his game, the style, the way that he was sitting in his post-integration stuff, like all of that looked vintage. He looked explosive. He looked patient. I mean, big picture, what matters about last night, Demko made it through the game without incident, performed well, looked very much like himself, and hey, if you want a ceiling-raising addition to this club, like that matters way more than a flat, lifeless effort, like a bad product at Rogers Arena last night, which is what it was, against a Blues team that outplayed the Canucks severely, despite also playing passionless hockey. I mean, that was a game with no heartbeat. It was honestly a little tough to watch. Maybe I'm being a little too negative about it.
That was a bad hockey game.
It was an unentertaining hockey game.
Yeah. And not just from a Canucks perspective, although I think there were some very alarming things about the Canucks' performance, but it's not as if the Blues were setting the world on fire either, right?
It was a completely bloodless Blues performance, too. The amount of times that Blues forwards pulled up on hits on the forecheck, like, shocked me. There was something that I've almost never seen at the NHL level in abundance last night. And actually, the Blues were bigger offenders than the Canucks, where I was watching them and I was like, oh, they forecheck gently. That's cute. And that's the meanest thing I've thought about an NHL player. Like, that is so far from acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I'm selling on the Blues new coach bump. I'll tell you that much. They're 5-1-1 in Monty's first 7 games, but I'm selling. That was a lifeless performance. And, you know, the Canucks at least have context explaining why their 5-on-5 form is so dismal at the moment, and why their defense couldn't move the puck. When you have way more icings than you have scoring chances in a game, it's just like, what are we doing here, guys?
Obviously, the puck moving has been an issue all year. No surprise there. And now Hronek's out, right? So you throw that on top of it.
Hronek's out, and then you remove Brännström by coach's decision from the lineup. And it's just like, wow.
I don't know that this is a problem. Ever seen it look more like laborious for a team to move the puck. And not just get the puck out of the zone, but watching them try to string together all of the things that have to happen to generate a scoring chance, right? Like getting the puck in your own zone, moving it cleanly out, getting through the neutral zone and into the other team's zone, then maybe trying to recover the puck on the forecheck, and then getting it off the boards and off the perimeter and into a dangerous scoring area.
Oh, you're
trying to hit a 16 leg parlay on NFL Sunday. It was like, oh my gosh, the odds of this happening are so slim.
It's like, we really need to stop here. Well, and most of the time it didn't look that laborious because it was simply iced.
Yes.
Or the Canuck, like, there were a lot of sequences where, like, credit to them, a Canucks defender would make a really good defensive play to turn puck, to turn the puck in the other direction to get the play moving in the right way, and then, you know, take a step across the blue line and just absolutely give it back to the Blues in the neutral zone. I mean,
that's what I mean. Like, even if you did job one, right, and then all the other jobs down the line are like, oh, well, this is really hard for us too.
Well, and we'll get into it in the crossover, but I thought it was interesting that Tocchet, usually so honest with the media, right, even before he was like, oh, why are you always asking this same question about Pettersson's performance, trying to elicit mm-hmm. praise from me, by the way. You know, even before that, he, like, defended his team's performance. And that is in stark contrast with what we saw last year when this team, you know, publicly anyway, held itself to some basic standards. Let's bring in the gentleman from Donnie and Dolly.
Producer Dom just gave me a totally blank stare there.
Like, he was waiting for my okay.
It is time for the crossover here on Canucks Talk. We welcome in Don Taylor and Rick Dolly. While you can check them out on Donnie and Dolly Monday to Friday, 10 to noon on Check TV. They join us here every Wednesday for the crossover. What's going on, fellas?
Well, I think Dom gave you a strange look because you referred to us as gentlemen, which has never happened before.
To be fair, that was Drance. Drance referred you as gentlemen. I would never do such a thing.
I think you're very gentle and you're very manly. So you are definitely gentlemen.
Ooh, wow. Okay. Yes. Well, I'll take that.
Would a gentleman only eat mini fruit?
Yes. Apparently. Okay, so there is a lot to talk about from last night. Obviously, the performance, the loss, Thatcher Demko's return, Rick Tocchet's commentary after the game. Let's start with the actual hockey, and then maybe we can move into, you know, the big debate about the media and asking about Petey and all that. But, like, the thing that stood out to me about that one, and we can talk about, you know, Quinn Hughes and how different the team is when he's on the ice versus when he's off the ice, but it was just another game, and I can think about three or four other ones at home this year, right? Dakota Joshua making his debut, you know, Quinn Hughes' brother's in town. That's a big game for him, for your captain. And then last night, Thatcher Demko's return, and in all of these big games at home, it just seems like the passion, the intensity, the emotion hasn't been there a single time for the Canucks so far.
Yeah, and we had a lot of discussion from our customers, our Delaney's OK Taryn Langley inbox, and a lot of people said this, and Rick and I said this before the show as well, and in a group text last night. You had Demko coming back, and you just expected some energy in the building. Not just necessarily in the building, but on the ice from the Canucks. You didn't really see that. Then you have a guy who dealt with cancer, your friend, your teammate in the offseason, getting his long-awaited first goal, and I didn't see or feel a lot of energy after that. A lot of people suggested that the game was boring last night. Obviously, you could argue that. It was frustrating last night. It was frustrating to watch because I just expected more emotion-wise, and that can help you win a hockey game if you're emotional, if you've got energy. And it wasn't there despite every reason for it to be there, and I think Rick Tocchet felt that at the end of the game, and then you had him going after Farhan in the post-game media conference, which was kind of fun.
Yeah, doing what we all want to do, and go after Farhan.
Yeah, no kidding. But 4-6-4 at home, Jamie, you know, like, also, I want them to come out one of these games and have a statement game at home where you could put all this aside and say, okay, enough nonsense with the home record. Hey, 10-2-1 on the road is something to be really proud of. They are, I mean, killing it on the road. But at some point, four wins after 14 home games. And then I'm looking at the standings last night, guys. They're tied with the Flames for fourth in the division. I know everyone's waiting for Calgary to, you know, fold their tent like a cheap tent, but they're not doing it. I give them credit. They're hanging around and hanging around. The Oilers won last night. The Kings won last night. The Flames won last night. Kings have won six straight. Vegas and Edmonton have won three straight. These guys aren't going on a heater. And last year this time, there was multiple winning streaks. You know, four-game winning streak, six-game winning streak, this, that. They had no adversity. This time last year, there was no injuries to speak of. There was no incidents like leave of absence. There was, you know, no Pettersson slow start. It's been really an interesting year. It hasn't been smooth at all right from camp because you had no Demko, you had no Joshua at camp, right? And then Pettersson starts slow, and now you're dealing with the Miller leave of absence, and you're dealing with a totally different team. You're incorporating 6, 7, 8 new guys. I know it's a little late to be talking about 6, 7, 8 new guys in the lineup, but again, maybe don't have 10 UFAs in 1 year. Like, they did sign some of their UFAs, but, you know, I look at their third pair last year, Zadorov and Cole. Very, very good. Gave you good solid minutes every night into the 15, 16, 17-minute range. And then you look at their third pair now, and it's absolutely anything but Zadorov and Cole. So, it's been a really weird year. They've had a lot of things go against them. They have had a ton of adversity. It's going to be really interesting to see because the schedule gets a whole lot tougher, boys. That road trip, four or five of the games were against easy teams. That's not, you know, you haven't played Colorado yet. Yeah. You haven't played Dallas, Winnipeg. You haven't played Vegas. You've only played Edmonton once. Like, this thing isn't going to get easier. It's definitely going to get harder.
Well, and I don't know that they played Edmonton. Edmonton played them. I don't know if they played Edmonton yet.
Yeah. Well, no kidding.
But I think Rick is right. I mean, the schedules. Luckily, they haven't seen too many of too much Ducks or Sharks either, so they'll have some soft games too. But you know, the inconsistency of results is one thing. It's the run of relatively lifeless efforts in games that you'd hope the group would, you know, sort of bring something. Given what it sort of means. I mean, being flat against Edmonton, the team that punched you out of the Stanley Cup playoffs last year, being flat against Jack Hughes in the Hughes Bowl against New Jersey, being flat in Dakota Joshua's return, being flat in Demko's return. I mean, there's just something off. Like, it just feels like, honestly, to me, and I thought Tocchet's commentary to Farhan, sort of objecting to a question in which, frankly, Farhan was trying to elicit praise for Elias Pettersson. It wasn't even a critical question. I don't know if there's like pressure that this organization is putting on itself, right? Or sort of setting themselves up in opposition to everything. But, you know, last year when they played flat and got a win, Tocchet would kind of level with us about what we were seeing. Mm-hmm. Like, he'd be critical of his team. Feels like he's protecting his team. Doesn't feel like there's sort of that like public accountability factor that this team had. Maybe that's a read from the coach that this team needs a little more a little more carrot than stick at the moment, and maybe there's something there, but it just feels like the weight, like they play the game like there's the weight of the world on their shoulders. I don't really understand.
Your attention to detail doesn't seem to be there like it was last season, and part of that is this. Rick Tocchet last year would point out deficiencies in his team's game after a win, but would point out that we weren't at our best, we didn't have our legs, we made a mistake here, we made a mistake there. But good teams get through that.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just, you know, they say, look, we don't have it tonight, but you know, it's 82 games, it's going to happen, you have to fight through that. And they don't seem to be doing that this year. And it's obviously, you can tell, but this is the second game in a row where he's been a bit short. Rick Tocchet short with the media. I think he's a nice guy.
Terse, yeah.
And everything. But it just must be real frustrating for him to see that, all that positivity last year in games in which they don't have it. And it's just not there so far this year. And you can tell it's starting to, or it has pissed him off in a big, big way.
Well, here's what I want to say on Tocchet and the press conference. He has looked frustrated to me, guys, in post-game interviews, win or lose, for the last 2, 3, 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Some answers are short. Some are terse. Canadian markets are great when you win. Canadian markets can get to you when you lose and things aren't going your way. I didn't see this from Tocchet last year. And again, they had no adversity till after the All-Star break last year. When they had, remember, they had 7-8 guys at the All-Star game. They were winning a ton of goals for. Goals against was great. No one was injured. Every single thing that could go their way went their way last year. The opposite is happening now. And you know, maybe the market's getting to Tocchet.
Are you going to blame the market?
Yeah, what are you talking about?
Donnie,
but yeah, Rick, hold on.
Go
watch that presser. Well, tell me what tough question he handled.
And also, Rick, I mean, they were on the road for 2 weeks. There was like
maybe,
one reporter.
Maybe
there's one reporter
the team
on the road.
It's getting him down, Rick. No. Maybe it's the fact that this team's performing this way. What do you think's more
everybody's
likely?
Everybody's against Dhaliwal.
No, look, it's it's the media.
Saying.
We have no answers to anything. Yeah, like
he does
what are
this
we talking
all the time.
About? I know, but it's okay, classic. It's insane.
Okay, why did he? I don't dispute Farhan's question. It was a good question. His reaction is telling me that the market's getting to him. That's two different things.
As opposed to the inconsistency of his team?
That's my question, really. Like, I get you're right that he seems annoyed, but I don't know if it's the media so much as it is he's frustrated with his team.
How about
that's
the 18
where he
million fires that he's got going.
I didn't say it was the media. His reaction to the question tells me that the market and the losing is getting to him.
And then
that's
he pulls
all.
Back.
Yeah.
And then he, even
yeah,
against Tampa
I mean.
Sunday after that game, he pulled back. And look, he said it yesterday, Thomas, if I'm not mistaken. I worked for TNT. He said it very quickly. Pulled back. And I think he understands the whole media game. But, you know, from that point of view, I understand he's upset.
Yeah.
He's upset with the way his team's playing. But still, you think that the big excuse is like, oh, it's the media, it's the market.
I never said the media.
Too hard on this team.
I said the market's getting to him. I mean, he's totally different than last year in post games. You see the video of him being short on answers, short and terse. That looks and sounds to me like a guy that the market's getting to him.
Jolly.
Remember, hey, hold it. Let me give you another. No, stop, Thomas. Go back to Rutherford's first or second year. Remember the market got to him and he cut the media off and he said, I'm not doing any media? That's what I'm talking about.
But that was actually criticism.
Managers, okay.
He was actually taking it.
Not from anyone here, of course, but well, for me especially.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm just saying the market gets to these guys. And it's true. I talk enough with agents. You guys know that.
Okay,
and,
Rick.
And
Rick,
you know what?
The market can get to players. You do this. We've heard this rant 10 times. Listen, no Canucks team ever in the history of this franchise has had a softer media environment than this team right now. You watch those road press conferences, and it is all team employees asking softball questions. You watch that presser last night. I was part of it. Very few tricky questions. No one throwing their fastball. This team has star players away for 10-game absences. They don't explain anything. Those star players are practicing today. They might not even talk to the media. Quinn Hughes got hurt on Sunday. We have no idea the extent of the injury. He's not speaking to the media. This team lets out statements on huge stories, accepts no follow-up, gives no details. The questions are not critical. The amount of traveling media is less than it's ever been. If this market is getting to you now, you are soft, period, soft. And you need to toughen up because you know when the attention's going to be biggest? When you get to playing the games that matter. When you get to the conference final. When you get to the Stanley Cup final. You remember 2011? You remember you could cut the media attention, the scrutiny, the criticism, like, with a knife. Do you know how loud the criticism of this team is going to be when they're in the Stanley Cup final? You think the rest of the Canadian media, the Eastern media, want to ever see this team
win?
Are? You ever think they're, like, it's going to be amplified just like it was in 2011. Like, you need to be able to handle it in December against the Blues if you're going to be able to handle it when it really counts. Come on. What are we talking about?
Yeah. I totally agree with what you're saying. And then the thing that bothers me is they don't give you answers. Like, that's a huge, like, what's going on? One of your best players is out for a long period of time. And then they get upset when you speculate. What else are we supposed to do?
If you don't give clarity, what are you supposed to do?
We're doing it now. Now you're on our side.
And you want to know.
Of course you're going to speculate.
You want to know the exception to this, by the way?
Go
the
ahead.
Guy who came into camp with a wildly mysterious situation and provided some transparency, and no one's been speculating, and the environment around the conversation around him is completely different than it has been around every other situation this team has dealt with. Patterson's slow start, on and on. Thatcher Demko. Thatcher Demko came in, ripped the Band-Aid off, handled it professionally with a little bit of transparency. How much speculation has there been on Demko since we made our initial reports in August? None, because he just explained what was happening. And now it's like there's like a burden that's off. The pressure gets turned down.
That's it.
With a little bit of sunlight. Wow, yeah. Shocking.
But when you come out with the truth or an answer, where does the media go from there? Well, they go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Like they stop speculating. But if you don't give a concrete answer,
pent up,
you know, people like us who do talk shows, we're going to talk about it.
Well, and
part of that talk is speculation, and it's hard to believe they don't understand that.
Yeah, and Thomas, I know you know of this situation. I mean, the Ian Clark situation, I don't think we have clarity on that as well. You know, what happened there? You know, there was no clarity given on, you know, why Ian Clark
went
from director of goaltending to a scout. You know, and is he even, he doesn't live here, but is he even helping in any fashion or form with the goalies in Abbotsford? Or, you know, I heard a rumor he's in town this week, but I don't know if he's in town for the Demko game last night. I know he's got a son who plays at the Delta Academy. I think he's a goaltender. I think he went in the late rounds to Portland in the Western League draft last year. But you're right. There is a clarity situation. When you don't give clarity to the media, they're going to go and try and find out what it is. And that's when you get the million rumors and the million innuendo.
And I think one of the reasons this is coming to a head now, and partly there's the Miller situation, there's been all these different situations, but who was the guy last season, and even since he's been hired, that you could always rely on for a straight answer, right? It was Rick Tocchet. And the thing that stood out to me most from last night's presser with Tocchet, it wasn't the comments about Petey, right? Like that to me is, you know, he slipped a little bit, he got a little frustrated, whatever. The thing that surprised me the most was him saying, describing that performance as, for the most part, it wasn't that bad. Like, really? I thought it was a really, really bad performance, especially when Quinn Hughes was off the ice. I thought it was pretty shocking, and I don't think we would have heard that from Rick Tocchet last year. So the fact that he's kind of falling back, I think, a little bit, whether it's the market, whether it's his team's performance, whatever it is, he sounds more like a regular NHL coach right now, right? Who's very shut off, very closed off, a lot more cliches, shorter answers, and it's completely different than the Tocchet we heard, and that got a ton of praise, rightfully so, in this market last year. And look, I know that's just what he's saying to the media, but I do wonder, does that start to trickle down, right? If he's kind of, you know, being a lot more defensive in publicly, does it trickle down to how he's coaching the team as well? That was the thing that stood out the most to me about what Tocchet had to say yesterday.
And that's not the question he should have went off on. Like, it's his body language too, guys.
Yeah.
Last two or three, 4 weeks, I've noticed his body language, you know, short, terse body language. He's frustrated. He's frustrated, guys.
Well, no, but also, I just wonder, like, when it can't come to the, when it comes to the Elias Pettersson discussion, are they thinking, and maybe this comes down from above, 11-6, mistake. Like, I know his point totals are good, but you look at the reaction amongst fans. I'm just wondering if it's just getting to these guys. Maybe they felt that this was a – maybe they feel that this was a big, big mistake. There's no shortage of fans who feel that way.
Wow.
Guys, can we just say this, though? Maybe this is part of it. It's not been the strangest start to a season you've seen.
Yes.
Not just the Canucks, but any National Hockey League.
Yeah.
Look at
By
their
far.
Record on the road versus their record at home where you're trying to sell tickets. It is so strange. You know, the injuries that they've had to deal with, personal issues that they've had to deal with. I can't remember a start like this for anybody.
Yeah, that's great.
And maybe that's the frustration. It's not so much, hey, we're losing at home, but, man, this is just bizarre. I don't know what to think. I'm going to snap once in a while.
Well, it reminds me a little bit of 11-12, where the team has the dream season in 10-11 and then come in 11-12 and the results are kind of still there, but you're watching it and you're just like, this isn't as fun. You know what I mean? Now, granted, they've actually been through a lot more
that
personal
was a weird,
stuff.
Weird, you forget they won the President's Trophy.
But it was more of a...
forget that, but it was just...
They ran the race, though, like they were zombies staggering through a village as opposed to marathon runners. They just happened to win it. Hey, Rick... Before we tie a holiday bow on what has been an
on this cheerful conversation,
this cheerful,
this joyful, happy conversation
of the crossover.
Yeah,
a lot of talk about Brock Besser here. Let's throw another drama log on the fire, the Yule fire that we've got brewing collectively. What's going on with Brock Besser's contract situation, a pending UFA beyond this season?
Okay, so there was a report back east that Besser's looking for 8 years and over $8 million on a long-term deal. But, you know, and Thomas, you and I have already stated in the market that Travis Konecny could be a comparable. He's at 8.7. Now, do I think he'll get 8.7? No. But should he get over 8? Yeah. Will his agent ask for over 8? Oh, yeah. And, you know, you're probably going to want 8 years, and that's the only place you can get 8 years is Vancouver, right, guys? So, look, Brock can bet on himself, and he'll do fine July 1st if there's no deal with the Canucks. Salary cap's going up, so there's going to be a ton more money on the July 1st market than there is, say, today. Also, don't forget the Canucks. I know Pettersson was an RFA, but don't forget the Canucks signed Pettersson last year, March 2nd, right? So there's plenty of time. There is communication between the two sides, all right? The want and the desire is to first to get it done in Vancouver, okay? And Pettersson's deal, guys, was not done in 24 to 48 hours. Got it?
Yeah.
They literally were talking to Pat Brisson and J.P. Barrie going back to July, 8-9 months prior. Right? You don't do deals of this magnitude when you just wake up and do them in 24 hours. You literally have to be talking to the agent for months and months and weeks and weeks, and I think communication there is fine. Couple things Donnie and I talked about Besser on the show. If you do 8 years, where's his foot speed in years 5, 6, 7, 8? You know, that's going to be a question, right? But also, the Canucks could be saying, was last year a one-off? You know, show us that you can get on a pace for 40 goals again before we commit 8 years and over $8 million. So there's that possibility that could be waiting for him to show glimpses and signs. And by the way, before he got his concussion, he was well on his way to scoring 40 again. This is a guy that's well-liked in the dressing room, well-liked by management, ownership. He's just been an absolute great draft pick, great hockey sense, great shot, the whole nine yards. The want and desire has got to be by both sides to get it done. The fact that it's not done by now is not alarming.
Nope.
But also, we have something called the trade. We got something called the trade deadline coming up. And if you don't have a good, read on the situation and a good sign you can get it done, then you know. And another
It depends where they are on this.
Yeah, that's true too, Don. And I'm going to throw this one out at you, because if that guy hits July 1st, he's going to do damn well. And there's a city called Minnesota. That, you know,
there's a state called Minnesota.
Yeah, I think it's Minneapolis or St. Paul.
Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Never mind.
See what I got to deal with?
Hey, what do you say when they come to town? You say the Minnesota Wild.
Well,
do you not say the Minnesota
that's
Wild?
Their team back to the state.
But I don't say
the Wild from the great city of Minnesota.
Oh, geez. Are you really going to go down here?
But Suter and Parise. Suter and Parise. Go.
Listen.
There's a city.
Minnesota, sit right there. His home frickin' city. Anyways, if he hits July 1st, you know that Minnesota is going to be, obviously, he can go and play in front of family and friends. And you know the Wild have been trying to get him for a long time, right? When his agent got permission to talk to teams 18 months ago, Minnesota was one of the teams that was in on him. Bill Guerin loves him. I know he didn't make the U.S. team for Four Nations, but the Americans hold him in high regard.
But the Suter and Parise money gets reduced year, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
right?
That's $14 million. Mm. The fact Minnesota is number one in the NHL
incredible.
With $14 million
in
dead money. Incredible.
Pretty wild.
Incredible.
I didn't even know I was going to think of that.
Pretty wild.
Ooh, that's good. Yeah.
It was not good, no.
Vancouver can offer him the eighth year, but Minnesota can make him the mayor of Minnesota.
All right, guys, this was fun as always. Dolly, we ganged up on you a little bit there. People on Twitter are getting, they're angry at us for ganging up on you.
I like it.
Yeah. Are they?
Hey, hold it. It rips into Farhan, and I had nothing to do with that. I didn't even say it was a bad question.
I followed it up with a joke.
Yeah,
it didn't bother me in the moment.
Yeah,
to be clear, I'm not bothered.
He didn't ask a bad question.
No, and I'm not bothered by Tocchet's response either. It's fine.
Yeah, but the fact he answered the question like that tells you that, yes, that something's wrong with him. The market's getting to him.
See, and I just think...
I almost wish that Tockett didn't work in the media. I almost wish that he hadn't had that media experience, because I think he has a soft spot for us.
Yeah.
Right? I just wish he would have just ripped right into...
well, he followed it up with, I love you guys. I was like, what? Really? This group? Do you actually? I don't know.
We don't even love ourselves, man.
They're not the most lovable group. All right. Thanks for doing this as always, fellas. We'll chat next week.
Adios.
Okay, that is Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal. You can watch them Monday to Friday, 10 to noon, on Donnie and Dolly on Czech TV. Yeah, that was a fun one. That was a spirited edition of the crossover. Lots more to get into from last night.
No, I'm not mad about how Tockett handled the question with Farhan, to be clear. Like, I followed it up with a joke. If you go watch the full video, I have no issue with it.
Thank you.
I have no issue with that. I do think it's a window into the vibe being off. I just think, like, the idea of, like, the media scrutiny, the market's really getting to this team. It's like, if it is, it's because they're spending too much time thinking about it and controlling the message and being obsessive about all of this, as opposed to just sort of handling it the way that it usually has been in this market.
Yeah, as I said, that the PD conversation or exchange was not the most concerning thing for me from Tockett's presser.
No, absolutely not.
Night. All right, lots more to get into. We'll do it next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz here, live from the Kintec Studio 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. Canucks Talk brought to you by The Hockey Shop in Langley. Shop in-store or online at TheHockeyShop.com. And the inbox is filling up. People fired up, just as fired up as we were during that crossover segment. And a lot to get into stemming from last night. And we'll see.
You know what really grinds my gears?
A lot of stuff. We'll see if JT Miller does indeed talk to the media after practice today.
Do you remember the Family Guy joke where Peter Griffin is trying to lie about his name and then he starts looking around the room for things that
he's
will
like a single
jog
pee.
His memory? A single pee, a woman crying, and then a griffin randomly. That's the best family joke of all time, by the way.
Yeah.
Peter.
I remember when Family Guy came out, I was in like grade 9. It was like a revelation. Like, word of mouth spread through like wildfire through Handsworth Secondary about Family Guy. Because it's like, you're like grade 9. It's like, could not be better, the more target audience for Family Guy.
I do want to say, I feel a little bit bad for leaving Rick Dhaliwal to run through a Scottsdale parking lot while we all ganged up on him.
I'll be keeping my eye on you. What's your name?
My name? Griffin.
The Griffin sound effect makes it.
That's pretty good. Yeah, we were all ganging up on Rick Dhaliwal there in the previous segment. All right, so one of the things, and I mentioned it just quickly before we got into the crossover with the guys in that first segment, you know, just how much of a struggle everything was, especially offensively for the team last night. And obviously, especially with Quinn Hughes off the ice. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of our listeners have seen our pal Dimitri's tweet last night, right? Highlighting the difference between the Canucks with Quinn Hughes on the ice in that game specifically and without him. And the number that jumps out to me, almost 32 minutes of game time without Quinn Hughes on the ice. Now, some of that, a bit of that is PK time, but still 32 minutes of that game without Quinn Hughes on the ice. And the Canucks had 4 shots on goal. 4. Only 9 shot attempts in 32 minutes total time without Quinn Hughes on the ice last night. Like, that is a stunning, shocking number, and it completely matches the eye test, right? I mean, that was a theme on the broadcast from Shorty and Ray. I'm sure everyone watching at home was just like, wow, they cannot move the puck. They cannot connect passes together. They cannot do anything dangerous offensively if Quinn Hughes isn't the guy out there pulling the strings and making it happen. And it was really striking to me because, of course, what did we spend so much time in the summer, in training camp, in September, in preseason, coming into this season talking about? It was this team's effort to go from
a really good defensive team that was limited offensively and needed to rely on, you know, point shots and lucky bounces and tip-ins and deflections to a more dangerous, a more complete team that looked like a Stanley Cup contender. And yes, I understand that there's been a whole host of absences and things out of their control and all of that. But we're almost 30 games in here, and that looked up there with some of the worst offensive performances they turned in the playoffs, right? And there were some bad ones in the playoffs where it was like, man, it's going to take a miracle for them to score. That was right up there. I know they ended up getting to three goals because they get the power play goal, they get the 6-on-5 goal, but we're almost 30 games in, and I like, the ceiling has not been raised at all for this team. Not at all for this team.
So I want to bring up to you a pet theory that I'm beginning to work on, and I'm probably unveiling it a little bit ahead of schedule, so please bear with me. I'm saying to you as my co-host, but also to our dear listeners.
Trust me, I'm always bearing with you. You don't need to tell me twice.
So are we.
And everyone listening to their radio is like, and me too. Anyway,
we're all stuck in here with you.
Like Batch. Did I tell you about the Batch thing about the airline recliners?
No.
Oh, man.
Oh, boy.
We'll get into it. The point is Batch thought that he could beat me in a petty off.
No, that's a mistake from Batch.
And I was like, buddy, I was born in hell. Let's go. Okay. So I'm going to refer to this.
I was born in the dark.
I'm going to refer to this colloquially as follows.
Okay.
The sleeping giant theory.
All right.
Okay. So the sleeping giant theory of Vancouver Canucks hockey is the theory that despite what we've seen across the first 27 games, this team is a sleeping giant in the Western Conference, a team that has been through so much turmoil from the passing of Derek Forbert's death to Thatcher Demko's injury to Dakota Joshua's testicular cancer diagnosis in the summer and the months that he missed returning to Pedersen's slow start to Philip Hronek's 8-week absence to JT Miller's, personal leave on and on down the line. And as a result, we haven't seen the ceiling that this team has, but it's there. It's dormant. They're a sleeping giant. Now, there is some evidence for this, right? If you look right now, you'll find that the Canucks are one of the most toothless offensive teams in hockey through the first 27 games of the year, right? They're like right back to where they were when we were talking about their fatal flaw, the inability to generate quality looks. They're, you know, one of the six worst teams in the league generating 5-on-5 shots. I guarantee you that number's down even further after last night where it took them 12 minutes. Right, to get their first shot in the third period while trailing at home. Familiar, right? Like, last 8 minutes, the Canucks turn it on. We've seen that before. Mm-hmm. We've seen that before in a critical game. So, for all of that, you know, when JT Miller left this lineup 16 games into the season, the Canucks were 11th in the league generating shots on goal. There was actually progress made in terms of this club's style, in terms of the ability to generate offense, in terms of getting some complimentary scoring. Hughes, Hronek were playing like the best pair in the league. And while certainly there were second pair issues in the first little bit of the season, the third pair with Brännström, like once Brännström entered the lineup, and frankly last night once he exited it, man, could you feel the difference in terms of this team's push. Yep. This club has very, very carefully told cap space all season, with an eye toward upgrading their blue line at the trade deadline. What we're watching in terms of the Canucks defense, what we're underwhelmed by in terms of watching this Canucks defense, is not necessarily what the club is going to have on defense when they enter the playoffs. As we saw last season when this team added Zadorov and then, you know, added Lindholm and on and on down the line, were able to upgrade themselves in midstream, something this organization does better than just about any team in hockey. Changes will come. Players will return to health. You hope for no compounding injuries. This team certainly played in the first part of the year like a club that still had their defensive structure, still had that ability to grind out wins or steal victories, frankly, pull off those incredible smash and grabs like they did in the playoffs last year, like they did last night, frankly, like they did in Detroit just a couple a week ago, basically. That's still in them. The ceiling case for this team, we haven't seen it. But that doesn't mean it's there. There's a sleeping giant effect that needs to be whether you're buying it or not, at least kept in the back of your mind as a possibility, I think, analytically, when we talk about and look at this team.
I think that's...
You buying or selling?
I think that's fair.
But
I don't
are
know
you
but
buying
I
would, or selling?
I think I'm selling. Like, I get what you're saying. No. But if you want me to just buy the part that, like, it's a possibility, then sure, I'll buy it.
It's in the range of outcomes.
Yeah, of course it is. It absolutely is. But I don't know. But I think it has my buy-in on that has meaningfully gone down over the last, like, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks.
See, the last 2 or 3 weeks are the part that I think I can't let sway me.
That's fair.
Like, not that I have to throw it out, but just that, you know, you play 2 games with no Besser, no Miller, no Hronek, no Demko, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Rangers game and the Ottawa game, and frankly, creditable efforts. I'd put those as, like...
Well, Hronek was in for those, but...
Oh,
no,
right.
No Miller, no Besser, no Demko.
No Miller, no Besser, no Demko. Right, okay. And then you play Boston and Pittsburgh with Hronek
and Besser.
And then you lose Hronek.
Yeah.
Now you've got Demko back, but you're going to be without Hronek, you know, for a while longer, like mm-hmm. another 6 weeks. And you're hopefully going to have Miller back. If not this week, then hopefully next. And, you know, I don't know. Like, one thing I'm curious about is this team's ability to generate offense has completely fallen off a cliff. And yeah, it's the last 10 games, but it's really gotten sharp the last 4 or 5.
Yes.
Is it more about moving the puck from the back end, or is it more about Miller?
More about JT Miller.
Like, I don't know.
I mean, it's compounding, right? Because whether you say it's more about one or the other one's a factor too, right? So you're dealing with both of them at the same time.
You might also be at a moment where all of your infrastructure is atrophied enough that, like, things fall apart.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's impossible to actually, like, delegate responsibility or sort of parse why. It's just that you're missing too many pieces to play your game. And that might be where the Canucks are, but that is a short-term thing. We mm-hmm. are expecting Hronek back. You know, is there no uncertainty about the fact that he was able to avoid surgery on the
yep.
upper body injury does not necessarily mean we're getting the 100% Hronek experience for the balance of the season. There's always the possibility of additional injuries on and on. But, you know, it is hard. Like, the last 3 weeks... As poorly as I think the Canucks have played on form, right? And I've spent the entire last week trying to make the distinction between, like, hey, credit to their effort for holding the fort,
mm-hmm.
but I don't like I materially don't think they're playing well, right? Now you're seeing them start to lose some of these coin flips, and I think that's become a more widespread accepted talking point. But I don't think we can weight these games too heavily analytically, because I don't think the Canucks are going to enter the playoffs down this many key players.
Yeah, you certainly hope not. That would be pretty dire
if it rolls around. And if they do, you know, we'll have to adjust our expectations.
Yeah.
But, like, the flatness of the last 3 weeks, to me, is, like, as easily explainable as anything. What I think is trickier for me to do is to balance what we saw through the first 16, 17 games from this team, which had me feeling pretty good about them. With the exception of, you know, some holes on the second pair, and
mm-hmm.
and sure, you'd love, like, an additional right-handed faceoff winner and, like, maybe one more right-handed finisher for the top nine and power play. You know, like, that's if not a contender, maybe a sub-contender.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's hard for us to evaluate this team, and I think we need to be careful about pronouncing them toast or sticking any forks in them while their core, like, this much of their core is absent from the lineup.
I think that's fair. The thing that has flipped for me, I like, it sounds so lazy, but it's the vibes, right? And I mean, how important were the good vibes last year? We talked about it a lot on this show, right? They were extremely important to keeping the momentum going. And it's not just the vibes seem off because they're missing a million guys and they're losing and all of that, but one of the things that we're banking on, or one part of your sleeping giant theory, and it's certainly something that I've been banking on since the start of the year that I'm now, I think, is in more question, is the idea of them going out and making a significant addition, right? And as you, I know you've reported and we've discussed on this show before, that's not set in stone, right? The team needs to earn that move for management. They need to demonstrate a certain level of performance, an ability to play the right way, an ability to play to their identity, to demand that management goes out and makes that type of move. And I think that element of it, I'm starting to doubt a little bit. Now, look, if they get JT Miller back over the next couple of games and, you know, he is refreshed physically, refreshed mentally, and starts to really turn what this team is doing 5-on-5 offensively and it looks a lot different and they play like that for a month, okay, well, maybe we're having a different conversation. But they can get everyone back. Even when they were fully healthy, we know they needed at least one defenseman, right? Maybe two. We know they needed, you know, a right-handed center to take draws, all of those things. We just expected them to go out and get them at the deadline. But I think we're now, the scenario that's become more likely for me is that management looks at this team and the fact that even when the guys in the lineup, with the exception of Hughes, have all been pretty up and down, and just thinks maybe, you know, maybe this isn't the time to go for it. Maybe this isn't the year to really try to go out and make a home run trade that augments our chances. And if they don't do that, then I'm going to have a hard time buying this team as a contender. So right. That's where it comes. That's where the rubber kind of meets the road for me.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, we're 27 games into the season. The Canucks are behind only 10 other teams by point percentage and have had literally nothing go their way, with the exception of like some pretty good finishing luck that has maybe buoyed them a bit across their last 10 games, right? Like that's really it. They've had, you know, they've run efficient, they've run hot, you know, mostly Jake DeBrusk with some sick touch in tight across the last 12 games. But other than that, like nothing has broken in their favor. And some of it's well outside the control of the team. Well, that's pretty good.
Yeah, so I'm like, it's definitely in play. The scenario you laid out is 100% in play. And I'm not going to sit here and say they're toast or anything like that. But if you're asking me to buy that it's like the most likely or something like that, then that's when I start to get skeptical.
So I don't know that it's the most likely, but I think it's within the fat part of the bell curve. My favorite part of the bell
curve. Of course, yeah.
And as a result, you know, we're approaching 30 games, and I like to talk about the certainty, you know, that comes with that. It's not going to this year, right? Like throw one other log on the, this season is nothing if not routine fire. But, you know, we're going to get 30 games into the season and I'm going to be like, well, I have 16 games with what I feel is a representative sample of this team with enough bodies, a high enough critical mass of key bodies in the lineup for me to say that I think that more closely approximates their true talent. I know nothing. So, you know, we're going to be in the dark a little longer, I think. And in that environment, right, I do think we need to look at this as like a more volatile team from a results perspective. The fat part of the bell curve is even fatter than usual. Jolly for the holiday. And as such, you know, I just think we need to keep that in the back of our mind in talking about this. And one thing I want to be very careful about is, as unimpressed as I've been by their last 10 games on form, right, I am leaving the light on for this team to show us their ceiling over the latter 55 games.
Yeah, look, there's plenty of talent on this team, right? So yeah. I'm not going to write it off yet.
I'm leaving the light on and not like a little bit, like bright.
There you go. Okay, we'll take a break here. Jason Bukala, our guy from Sportsnet, a former NHL scout, he joins us next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
Eurobeats.
Where are you spinning next, Dom? Got a set coming up?
Yeah, I'm working at the Harper Center.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. That Jamie Dodd, beat. Thomas Trantz here. It's not bad. Beat. The remix.
You should hear. He found a spooky Christmas song, and then we were mixing Jigsaw into it. Jigsaw, do you want to play a game? It was great.
Do you want to play a game?
Oh, boy. There's a lot going on here. I don't know about this. We're coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Now time to chat with one of our favorites here from Sportsnet's NHL coverage. He was on the panel for the game last night. Former director of amateur scouting in the NHL, he is Jason Bukala. Books, what's going on, man?
going on with you guys? Lena gave me the heads up. You guys are, it's like a cat scrap on your end there. A little heated discussion. I like it.
I don't know if you're familiar with Rick Dhaliwal, but things tend to get heated when he's on the show. That's all I'll say, Bukla. But yeah, I mean, there was a lot.
Don't blame him. This one was on me. Books, this was just Mount Brance had a little eruption.
I love it.
Yeah. But I mean, look, there was it was a very newsy day, and then obviously the game and the result and Thatcher Demko's return and Miller was back at practice, and then, you know, Rick Tocchet is frustrated with the media asking him about Elias Pettersson. There's just a lot going on with this team right now, as there it seems like there has been all season long. So maybe it's just getting to everybody a little bit. But I mean, that game last night, we can talk about Demko's return, and look, I know they tie it up late and they get the point going into overtime, but I just thought they struggled so much offensively in that game to generate anything that looked dangerous. What were your takeaways from that game last night, Books?
Pretty much the same. I thought that it was much more low event for the enthusiasm that I was taking away from the pregame presser from the coach, and you know how he described that the group is going to be very excited, and so they should be, to be playing in front of a Vezina quality goaltender who's worked really hard to get back in the lineup. So on balance, I thought that it was just okay. There was a few outliers for me in the game, I have to be honest. I've been waiting for Carson Soucy to be consistently the best version of himself for me this year, and especially on the overtime goal, guys, like that really bothered me. Holloway drives the lane, but I can't remember who had the check back door, but Soucy basically checked nobody. He went to the middle of the ice, and he needed to step out and take away that lane because it was a free pass to the net for Holloway, and that really bothered me. But yeah, you know what? It was just okay. I don't know how else. The urgency at home, for some reason, the straight line hockey, the attack, the energy, the extra layer, I guess is what I'm trying to say to you, has been kind of wavering. It's not been there consistently. And this group's got to make hay at home in these home games because it's just going to get exponentially more difficult in the back half to get points on the road.
Yeah, I mean, so Soucy's game quietly, Books, has stabilized. Like, he was really struggling, I think, for the first 4 or 5 weeks of the season. And quietly over the last month, you know, the phrase you use, the best version of himself, I don't know if we're there, but we're definitely at the level where at least he's been like a helpful second pair guy. As much as you might have liked to see him play the Holloway situation differently, does the fact that they're using Carson Soucy 3-on-3 point to a larger issue with Vancouver's blue line construction?
I think that's you're probably more bang on with that than I should be with exposing him in that play there. I guess my expectation of Carson Soucy, especially when you have injury in the lineup, my expectation goes up a lot. I feel like we pick on everybody does this. There's certain players that seem to get more attention than you get, but you need 10 or 15% out of everybody in the lineup when certain people are out of the game. And yeah, you're probably right. Like Soucy normally probably wouldn't be even thrust into that situation. So, you know, sure, I throw a rock at that house. I don't know if it's really fair to do that either. You bring up a good point. You really do, because you're looking for offense. You're looking to regroup with the puck and, you know, hopefully he's quick strike. And he's usually not in that situation. So I think that's fair.
What are you seeing out of Elias Pettersson? You know, he's got 23 points in 15 games. And yet, you know, we talked about it. Jamie, you'll remember this right before the Miller absence. We were talking about, you know, the idea of like getting performances. Rick Tocchet actually would refer to it, I suppose, as the FU in the Canucks game, but getting performances that drag the team into the fight.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like maybe that's an area of potential growth still, even if Pettersson's producing of late, where, you know, those sort of like inspiring performances from a top player on your team. I don't know if he's been there yet, Books. What are your thoughts?
I think what you're looking for here is more personality out of his game and more stepping outside his comfort zone to show the team that he's capable of have a little bit more heavy lifting or a little bit more outward emotion, and that's never going to happen, guys. So don't waste your time or your breath. Like, he's programmed a certain way. His game on balance, he played over 23 minutes last night. His game on balance has been, I guess, much better than it was at the beginning of the season. I would suggest, similar to, if you want to, you know, use a Susie comparison, I'll throw this one back at you too. I think he's been better than he was at the beginning of the year. The problem is the cap hit and the amount of money in relation to the result and the expectation that goes along with that sometimes doesn't add up to be what we're all looking for. Not only the fan base, but, you know, us guys talking about it, and it's certainly probably the coach behind closed doors. He's definitely challenged the player, and not just him, but let's just specifically him, challenged him and reached out to his teammates to challenge him to be more, like you say, more in the fight consistently. Has he gotten it? I'm trying to be as delicate as possible here because I've seen all the news the last 24 hours. I've seen the press conferences and everything. He hasn't been good enough for me. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that he's been great. I'm not saying that, but he hasn't been terrible lately either. And he's playing a ton of minutes, and you know, he's part of the tying goal. He's net front a lot more often. He's extending more plays, but I still feel like there's another level there. And hopefully when JT comes back, these guys can get things going and we can see, hopefully, because I'm tired of talking about it, to be honest.
Yeah. You and Rick talk about it.
Yeah. I keep saying, hopefully this, hopefully that, but sooner or later, I just want him to go off, you know? And
yep.
I.e. ranting in last night in Pittsburgh with a 5-point effort. You know, I'm waiting for something like that to happen.
Books, I referred to it in the last segment as what I'm calling the sleeping giant theory. And it's sort of a idea that usually at about the 30 game mark, Books, I start to become a little more certain in talking about like what a team's true talent level is, what their real quality is. And yet this Canucks team has so much infrastructure that's out of the lineup at the moment with Miller and Hronek. And, you know, they've been without Miller for 10 games now. They played 5 without Besser. They've played 6 weeks without Dakota Joshua. Thatcher Demko's played 1 game. Filip Hronek 6 weeks away from coming back. Like, on some level, this club's going to get to the 30-game mark, and I'm going to look at the first 15 games as being a better approximation of what this team maybe is when they're at full capacity versus what we're seeing them from them lately, like how they're trending. Do you buy that the Canucks could be a sleeping giant in the West, given all of what they've dealt with while still hanging around in the playoff mix to this point in the season?
Yeah, I do buy that. I think that they're very capable when this group finally all comes together at the same time, when they all arrive at the same time. And let's be clear, let's just hope that happens. You know, like this, you never know how things are going to go between now and the end of the year. But on balance, yeah, if they all come together and they have a good stretch of, call it a month and a half together at the end, yeah, they absolutely could be. You just got to get in. And let's not forget last year, they get through the first round of playoffs, and Demko, they didn't even have a chance to run out there. Abez in the finalists. They didn't have a chance to run him out there. Like, Silas was as good as he could have been. We would probably all agree with that. But at the same token, they weren't the most complete roster at that time. I'm hoping they get an opportunity to do it. And when they do, I think this is a really strong team. I really do believe that. I think that that they have a chance to do some nice things. More than that, you need some puck luck. You need big saves. You need a lot of things in playoffs. We all know that. But the fact of the matter is, it's not all Debbie Downer time here. This team, on the surface, are treading water at times. But like, look at who's been out of the lineup, guys. If we were giving Colorado a pass at the beginning of the year for all the absentees out of their lineup, and now they're starting to go when they start to get guys back, and they look closer to, and now they made a trade for, like, they've redone their rejigged their goaltending tandem. Now you can see where they're going. In time, the Canucks hopefully arrive at the same time, and we can get a better picture of that as well.
What'd you think of Thatcher Demko in his first game back last night, Books?
First of all, let me tell you something. You guys have been around the game and been down at ice level. So you can practice as much as you want. You can rehab. You can, you know, everything you can do. But without a preseason, and then you're thrust into NHL action. And the NHL games only get harder from October on. You know, the more detailed, they get harder. And it's a heavy lift to get between the posts when everything's happening so quickly. You know, the first goal against, I don't like that he went back. He knows what he, like going back in on the outlet pass on the first one to go around the wall and then not really track it to get set. I thought his second period really was good. He made a couple of breakaway saves. His size mattered. Hey, guys, like it wasn't that the breakaway saves were the cleanest looking things, but he's a big body. And as you know, pucks hit bigger bodies sometimes. And I just liked them progressively. I liked them much better. It's going to be curious to see how he woke up this morning. You guys would know better than me, by all accounts.
At practice today.
Perfect. So this is good. But Lankinen's earned the platoon for a while. We can load manage Demko because it's delicate, isn't it? This team needs to start winning games at home on this stretch. 1-1-1 in the last three. We talked about it last week. They were going to be going into 9-11 at home, and God, we got to make, you know, they got a point last night, and you can say, yeah, that's great, but they need two, and they need two, and they need two. You know what I mean? We got to string it together here. And so whoever starts next, if they come up with a big effort, I think they'll probably flip-flop a couple of times. But if Demko really starts to get in a groove here in the next couple of weeks, you're going to have to run him out there, not just every other, probably really get him going. So fingers crossed.
Yeah, I think it's sharp that you talked about today, because that to me was, you know, him being back on the ice at practice was a crucial data point, right? It's like, how does he make it through?
Sure.
Do you make it through without incident? Do you recover quickly enough to be doing a normal workload, right? Because even if you're not going to play him, like the demands on a backup, you know, like the demands on a goaltender the day they're backing up, where you're last on the ice and you're working with scratches. I mean, if you're going to roll with two goalies, even if Demko's going to be in a perfect split with Lankinen, which I doubt as he ramps up, right? Like even that has significant physical demands. So, you know, the fact that he was able to just get a normal work day in, get a normal recovery in and be back at it today, to me, that was huge for this team.
I totally agree with that. I totally agree with that. And let's imagine it this way too. We can talk about the physical, you know, and that's the easy, like how do you recover physically from a fitness perspective, the mental side of it, like the buildup to yesterday, he won't probably come out and say it, but well, I think he kind of did, you know, how yesterday felt different to him, you know, in his preparation, stuff like that. But that took a mental toll on him last night too, like the unknown, you know, I'm getting back at it. How am I going to perform tonight? I put all this preparation to it, yada, yada. So you don't sleep the same way last night. And then you got to come back today and get right back after it. So he's a pro. I'm glad to hear that he's at practice. The first 10 days are going to be crucial to his trajectory going forward here. And I mean, it's good news that he's back, and I just hope that he stays that way. And it's such an unusual injury. I'm no, you know, I stayed at a Holiday Inn last night, but I'm no doctor as anybody can attest to. And like, this is an unusual injury anyways. So this is good news that he's feeling okay today.
Did you actually stay at a Holiday Inn last night? You're on the road so much that it's actually possible.
No, you know me, buddy. I'm lapping up those Marriott points as much as I possibly can.
I hear you might be coming to Vancouver in January as well, Books.
I am coming out. I'm doing a roadie, and I'm hoping to come see you guys for a little in studio.
Lena, absolutely, yeah.
She says that's okay, so I'm looking forward to that. But
you got the okay from Lena?
Yeah, well, I was going to have to ask you guys first. I'm trying to be kind, but you know, hopefully a little excursion. We'll go on a field trip in the city for some dinner and really get some laughs.
Yeah, we got to take you to AJ's. Rolling out the big stops for our guy Books.
Yeah,
take me wherever, buddy.
So I'm curious to get your thoughts on this Pacific Division race, which is so tight right now, right? I mean, if any of Calgary, Vancouver, LA, or Edmonton lose a game, they can drop to fifth. If they win, they can drop, they can rise to third or second in the Pacific. I mean, it is so truncated between these four teams. The Pacific, I think we're right to look at it as sort of a weaker division relative to certainly the Metro. Probably to the other divisions as well, the Central and the Atlantic. But it's kind of shaping up to be a pretty interesting knife fight here. How are you thinking about the Pacific through the first 30 games?
LA has surprised me, first of
all. Yeah, me too.
I have to say, they're not a team that jumps off the page and really excites me a great deal, and the goaltending and just a bunch of different things there. But they're finding ways to win. Like, they've reeled off five in a row, fellas, and that's impressive. I'd still say that when Vancouver gets healthy, gets closer to the best version of themselves, that it's still Vegas, Edmonton, Vancouver, and then there's, you know, it's going to be a knife fight, like you say, for potentially a wild card. And it looks like LA is capable of that, but I'm still, you know, Edmonton's tracking. That's the thing. Like, their power play is, in their last segment of games, is over 35%. Their penalty kill has been really good. It's, you know, in the mid to high 80s. And Stuart Skinner is on time now. So Stuart Skinner, at the beginning of the year, despite his stature, wasn't playing between his posts, his low net coverage, his kicks, like his feet, his engagement. He was just off. And even off the rush, like off the flank, he was just, nothing was quite as square and clean as it needed to be. Now they're starting to fine tune things, and they look strong, I have to say. But again, you know, I would argue that LA's probably been the best version of themselves already. So, you know what they've got. The other teams, you know, Vegas is Vegas, and you know they're going to pull something out of the air come trade deadline.
They're just randomly going to add a star player. Yep.
Something's going to happen there. And we'll see. But I'm hopeful for the Canucks. You know, this organization put so much work into getting so much better last year and creating that culture. And now this year, I would argue this, and maybe you guys agree, if they didn't create the foundation and the culture that they did last year, imagine how much more disjointed this fall could have been for this team. Okay,
no
so
kidding.
They have an understanding. They have a culture. They have the structure. The coach has got their back. If they didn't have that all in place, imagine how much worse it could be. So let's take the positive. Let's take the high road here and hope for good things.
The other thing that this team seems to have, Books, is I call it sort of the, like, I remember Patrick Sharp once told me, talking about those Blackhawks days, that, you know, they'd get into the room after Patrick Kane had pulled off some shorthanded goal with 8 seconds left against the Predators to tie game six, or, you know, the Jonathan Toews shorthanded goal to tie game seven against the Canucks. Like, all of those narrow escapes that they sort of became specialists in the playoffs. And you know, the line was, there's something in these jerseys, boys, right? Like, there's something in these jerseys.
Yeah.
There's something in these jerseys for this group. Like, there's some underlying balls or guts, or just, like, I mean, we saw it last night, the ability to get that 6-on-5 goal from DeBrusk, the play from Pettersson that sets it up, just that combination of skill and will that makes this team so difficult to defeat, to put away, to kill. If I'd gone with kill, it would have rhymed. Anyway, how do you rate that as just like an important factor that this team kind of pretty clearly has? Does that matter in terms of how you evaluate them going into the playoffs?
100% it does. 100%. So let me give you an example. That was a horrific call on Brock Besser in the offensive zone on Parayko. I mean, Parayko's 6 foot. I said it on the broadcast. I'm surprised I didn't get a note and get in trouble about it today. But anyways, I said it anyways. And 6'6", 228-pound guy, Besser's riding his back pocket. And that was a horrific call. So there's been years gone by or with lots of teams, especially losing teams. They will get super distracted by that. Not only did they get scored on, but, you know, they can lose the game, if you will. Like, they'll lose the game, lose their focus to the point that they just get totally off it. Instead, the Canucks, karma, by the way, karma, what goes around comes around. The next one goes in off of Parayko's skate and into the net, which is fascinating to me. But anyways, if you believe in that stuff, what I'm trying to tell you is that they have that stick-to-itiveness. They stick to it, you know, and they found a way. And again, those are the positives that I take out of it. This isn't going to be an easy out this team. When they have the goaltender going the way it can go and everybody comes back healthy, this is not going to be an easy out. They'll get back to playing on straight lines quicker, harder, faster, and have more balance on balance throughout the lineup when all that happens. So I like it. I think that they've this in a weird kind of way, all these distractions and what they've gone through here in the fall could really build towards something really positive in the spring when they're all back together, because they knew on their worst day that they could perform at a capable level.
The thing about the missed call or not the missed call, the phantom call on Brock Besser, you're going to get a makeup call because the back ref knows the moment he sees that highlight that he's just whiffed, right? Like he thought he had an angle that the ref who was right on top of it didn't. He was wrong. It's just a miss. Like, it's honestly one of the most understandable types of bad calls where it's like, it looked weird to see Parayko fall the way he did physically. So you thought right. there was a trip. You thought you saw something. You were wrong. It's a classic whiff. The Canucks got to go off the ensuing draw. You initiate contact and you dive. You're going to get the call every time. That was, you know, as much as I liked the you know, righteousness with which they played PP1 when they did get the makeup call after the goal against, prevent the goal against, initiate contact and dive off the ensuing draw. What are we doing?
Oh, my God. I know.
And you can't tell me I'm wrong.
No, that's why I'm chuckling, because you're not wrong. But I hate that you're not wrong in that, because it shouldn't be that.
You know, no, it shouldn't.
I mean? I'm conflicted by that.
But we all know the score. We all know the score, guys. Come on.
That's the way it works.
Initiate contact and drive and dive. Come on. Let's go.
Well, I'm not going there. I'm not going to say it. I'm also not going to say you're wrong.
Hey, Books, just before we let you go, I just wanted to check in on the Calder race, which I know you're always plugged in on. Who's leading the way for you so far at this point in the season?
Oh, good one. Well, Dustin Wolf was leading it, I got to say, for a while there, but I just don't see how Macklin Celebrini by the end of the year isn't going to be the Calder winner. This kid's electric. The San Jose Sharks are fun to watch. There's that trade with Colorado boys, under the radar, picking up the Kovalenko kid to go to San Jose to add another layer of potential scoring there. That's an under the radar acquisition by Mike Greer, along with the second round pick when he flipped the goaltenders. But for me, it's Celebrini and, boy, I don't know about you guys. He's just fun to watch. If you're going to step late and watch a game, San Jose's not a great team, but that kid is full of pee and you know what, and full of skill and will. I love watching him play.
Sorry, why did you say the piss you know and not what? The vinegar? Is there something inappropriate about vinegar that I'm not aware of?
Yeah, well, I was gonna say the other P word. I don't know why you have to. I can only get in so much trouble in a week with some vinegar, is what I was trying to say.
All right. Well, we appreciate it anyway, Books. We'll let you go before you get in any more trouble on here, all right?
Okay, you two idiots enjoy the rest of the
day. Thank you.
Thanks, Books.
He is Jason Buchla. You see him on Sportsnet's NHL coverage. You read his work at sportsnet.ca. And, of course, he's a former director of amateur scouting in the NHL as well. And just an overall beauty. An absolute beauty there.
Truly. Should we take him somewhere nicer than AJ's? No way, right? AJ's forever.
We'll see. Maybe we start
AJ's experience.
Start the night at AJ's. We'll see.
Yeah, I know Books. He'll love AJ's. Yeah.
Every great night starts
at AJ's. I'm serious. Like, I was like, should we take him somewhere nicer than AJ's? I'm like,
Where is nicer?
There is nowhere nicer than AJ's.
Tell me a pizza
place. It's a
trick
question. It doesn't exist.
No. Well, not just I'm talking about anything. It's my favorite place in the city.
The ultimate restaurant.
I'm not kidding.
It's been perfected. All right, we'll take a break here. By the way, we were hoping to potentially hear from JT Miller. He's not going to speak to the media today, it doesn't sound like.
Nope.
So we'll see. That's fine. But,
yeah, totally fine.
He was at practice today. We'll see if we get an update from Talkett on, you know, his potential availability for tomorrow, what it looks like. I did note also that apparently Talkett started his presser at practice today by jokingly updating everyone on Elias Pettersson's breakfast order.
Nice. What was it?
Bacon and eggs, I think he said.
Oh. No avo? I would have thought, I would have taken Pettersson for an avocado toast guy.
Yeah. A healthy fat.
Anyway, so we'll see if we get any further Elias Pettersson updates from Rick Talkett.
Avocados.
In the final segment here. We'll do the whiteboard as well. Next on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.